The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
The way it's told on television, they're almost all for sale. I mean, if you drive in there, you can get the best deal in town. You're going to save so much money, you'll come out with enough for about two vacations and several more gifts than you'd planned for Christmas next year, and maybe, just maybe, even give the kids a free ride on an elephant while you're there buying the car. Why not go now and pay later? Charge it, buy it, consolidate your loans, and pay it all off in one easy monthly installment. And what about the boat show and the recreational vehicles, the new gun and all the electronic and all the new and the clothes? And besides that, if you would just take that purse out from under your arm and use that credit card, you could get out of debt. It's a plastic world. About half of what we buy with plastic. It's wrapped with plastic and sometimes even made of plastic. You begin to wonder whether or not we are plastic in our plastic society. It's amazing that about 78% of all that takes place in transactions in business is just paper and plastic. That even if you're talking about money, I'm not talking about paper money, I'm talking about pure checking. Checking accounts, or writing out and receiving of checks, bank drafts, notes, and so on, all that takes place in commerce and business in the United States, whether public or private, is basically paper and plastic, about 78% of it. And then, of course, the remainder might be paper money, and the question about what that's worth is increasingly a big one. Well, Americans are in debt. Nearly all Americans are in debt. In terms of the United States gross, and it is gross, public and private debt, it exceeds $2 trillion. The shocking enormity of American public and private debt is just about to stand your hair on end when you hear the statistics because, well, a little later I'll tell you some of the facts about presidents. I'm tempted to skip ahead to it right now and perhaps repeat it at least once because it took 60 years and 11 presidents to spend our very first billion, so the government got into debt. But now the government spends $1 billion every 2 days. I'll repeat that again. There was no national debt at all in the United States until 1840. Only $1 billion in 1915, $16 billion in 1930, and $380 billion today. It took 60 years and 11 presidents to spend our first billion. And now the government spends $2 billion, or $1 billion rather, every 2 days. Enormous, isn't it amazing? Of course, I know we're huge by comparison, and statistics can sometimes be deceiving. We're a much bigger country today, and the biggest the world has ever seen in terms of gross national product and a lot of other ways, such as divorce and the like. Well, $2 trillion that equals our national debt would be a string of $1,000 bills going eight times around the earth, to give you some kind of a comparison. These are interesting little ways of saying how interesting it is the way we are deeply in debt. That would mean quarters stacked 8 million miles high, or to the moon and back 16 times. It doesn't say here which kind of quarters. I think that means the kind we use today that are not really worth a quarter. Total debt increases by $5,000 a second, nearly $500 million daily. Per capita debt is over $10,000. Only 1,000 of that, though, is personal debt. Debts today are 40 times the currency supply and nearly 200 times the gold supply. Of course, we are astute enough as American citizens that we know, all of us do, that there are claims in foreign areas, foreign banks, against our gold far surpassing the amount of gold there is there to pay it. So not only is it safe to say that America owes more than the rest of all the world produces yearly, it's also safe to say that America is horribly head over heels in debt to ourselves, and we are in debt beyond what we're able to pay to other countries as well. For the most part, the national debt consists of bonds. That's the debt the government owes to citizens for bonds the government sold to the public to raise money. There are two types of these bonds, United States savings bonds and U.S. Treasury bonds. The average citizen may never see a treasury bond, but the savings bond you hold is a major part of national debt. We called them war bonds back during World War II. The national debt continues to grow as we continue to spend in a deficit spending situation. That is, continue to spend money as a federal government that the federal government does not have. Well, so much for the government's debts, but what about the private debts collectively of every American citizen? The average American citizen owes about $1,000.
He accrued that debt by spending money he does not have, by listening to ads on this medium and in the shop windows of all of our towns and cities, and the fantastic outpouring of goods and services and the advertising of them that makes us impulse buyers that want to buy or go now and pay later and spend money we simply do not have. Not that all credit spending is bad. As a matter of fact, if it weren't for credit buying and credit spending, I don't know whether 90% of the young people getting married these days would simply have to delay it until they're old enough to know what marriage is about or not. But if it were absolutely illegal to get married on less than, say, $300, I don't know whether you can set an arbitrary figure, but I mean completely out of debt, and even $300 at a good, you might cut off about half of the marriages today. A little bit more about that later. Not all credit buying is bad, maybe not even the principle is bad all by itself, but ungoverned credit spending on the part of individuals who shouldn't be doing it, who are buying things they don't really need and shouldn't have for much more than they cost with money they don't have and can't afford, can lead to incredible financial burdens, and of course it does. Credit is good. Most Americans could never own a home or a car, or at least use a home or live in a home or use a car without credit. A lot of people wouldn't be wearing the clothing they have, using the recreational vehicles, taking the vacation or the trip to Hawaii or someplace, if they weren't in hock up to their lower ears or the upper lip with some credit company or loan and mortgage company or bank or something of the kind. Your credit rating is only a measure of your ability to earn money compared with your expenses and your willingness to pay what you owe. You establish a credit rating over a period of time. I found when I first came out of the Navy, it was almost impossible to buy anything. It was almost impossible for me to go into debt because I wasn't already into debt. It was like being told by an employer, you want a job with me, you know, in this factory. Yes, I want a job. Yes, sir, I sure do. Well, are you a member of the union? You say, well, no, I'm not a member of the union. Well, I'm sorry, we employ only union laborers here. And you say, well, how do I go join the union? They say, well, get out of local so-and-so at the office. So you get out of the union, you try to join the union. Well, where do you work? I don't have a job. But you can't join the union unless you got a job. And it's kind of a head-scratcher there for a while. They begin to tell you to go around in circles. You can't join the union without a job. You can't get a job without belonging to the union. Well, you get down and you try to go into hock. You want to go into debt. And they say, well, now give us some credit references. I didn't have any. I had money in the bank. Not very much, but a little. You know, I was just fresh out of the Navy. And I didn't owe anybody any money. They said, well, can't you at least give us one or two or three credit references? I mean, do you have an account with maybe one of the department stores? Do you owe any money on a car? Are you buying an appliance? Are you in debt to anybody? No, I'm not in debt to anybody. Well, I'm sorry. I honestly had to go and get my brother-in-law, who was in debt up to his upper lip, to go down to the store with me and co-sign so I could go into debt to buy an item that I wanted to buy on time payment. Now, when you are out of debt and you go into a place and they want to know, can you list several credit references where you have these plastic cards where you're in debt, you know, so many hundreds of dollars a month, and you got payments going out for appliances, for an automobile, for a home, for all these things that we buy. If you are not in debt, you will have a horrible time buying anything for less than cash. And if you do try to buy it for cash, the chances are they won't accept the money. I remember well, I have not come into possession of very many $100 bills in my life, but I have seen a few. I was up in Colorado, and I went into a small or medium-sized town. I was going to buy a lot of various items that I wanted, and so I walked in and made the purchases, and down to a $100 bill I had to pay for it with. You know, the cashier was so shocked that she called the manager, and they wanted to look at my driver's license, and they took the number off the driver's license, and dutifully noted this all down and held this thing up and looked at it and kind of, I don't know whether the guy chewed on it, you know, or subjected it to an acid test or something of the kind. I don't know if they'd ever seen one before either, but they were awfully suspicious of the thing. I would have been far better off with a piece of plastic that said I was in debt up to my upper lip in some other company someplace else than I was with a bona fide $100 bill. Whatever a bona fide $100 bill is. Of course, it's not really worth much either when you get right down to it. There are 300 million of those credit cards in circulation right now. That means more credit cards than there are people in the country, and a large share of those are bank cards. Now, used rightly, of course, those cards can be a very great service and can save a lot of time and trouble, but many feel because they have a certain limit on their credit cards of certain amounts that it's proper for them to charge right up to that amount. You might be a better judge, though, of what you can afford the computer is some arbitrary limit set by the company that gave you the card. Well, a lot of family arguments and a lot of business arguments and a lot of expense account problems when it comes income tax time are started over the use of these plastic cards. Well, the purposes of this program, as we wrap up the several that we have done on the subject of economy, and the subject really of geopolitical economies, of trade wars that are getting started around the world, of the habits and the practices of nations, of coin clipping, of the manipulation of their individual currencies, of the revaluation or the devaluation of currencies to vie for better trading positions, is to bring the subject down to the meat and the food on our plates and on our tables and the clothing on our back and the gasoline in our automobiles. We as a country are in trouble geopolitically with other countries as we increasingly price ourselves out of foreign markets and increasingly find that other countries are able to produce quality goods at very highly competitive prices and outsell us even inside the United States with the kind of commodities we should be better able to design and produce than can they. You begin to look at the world, though, and you wonder, where are we right now as we look at the rounds of world war that have brought about the threat of the virtual extinction of the human race? Are we seeing today a dangerous drift in world trade, in the shaky economies of country after country, global crises in government, a global crisis in energy, the global disparity between the number of mouths to feed and the dwindling foodstuffs there really is, a 1 month's emergency supply of food grains for the world as a whole? Is there anything in the overview you can put your finger on, any pulse you can detect here that gives you some sort of meaning to this seemingly kaleidoscopic series of events that really have no broad meaning except as you address one point and the other as a separate issue? But when you look right down into the personal individual lives of the average American, be he shipyard worker or a worker in the Ford factory at Ypsilanti, Michigan, or whether or not he is a truck driver or day laborer or a blue-collar worker, as we say, or a businessman, a white-collar worker, you find the habits of individual fiscal responsibility, of individual spending habits, are just about like those of the nation itself. We are habitually a go-now, pay-later society, and we are spending money we don't have for items we probably don't need, oftentimes inferior with built-in obsolescence, and gaily and freely plunging head over heels deeper and deeper in debt every single day.
We'll return to the program after this word. Ladies, you owe it to yourself to look your very best. So begin each morning by...
You owe it to yourself to get away for a while. Let us fly you there.
Wouldn't you really...
Do you owe it to yourself, or do you owe it to the finance company? Nothing down with easy terms is a road we all have to walk sometimes, but it can lead to needless debt instead of the good life. Managing Your Personal Finances is a free booklet that gives a step-by-step guide to sound money management. If you have a financial headache, you know there isn't any easy answer. But Managing Your Personal Finances points out 6 rules which will help end your money worries and lead to real financial prosperity. Request your free copy, Managing Your Personal Finances. You owe it to yourself. Dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
This booklet on managing your personal finances is a booklet that happens to understand, behind the writers of it, there is the understanding that there is a living financial principle or a law that regulates our own personal indebtedness. There are biblical principles about thrift and frugality, biblical principles about honesty that are underlying concepts from which this booklet is written. Yet I doubt if there is a single scripture that is quoted in the booklet. What you're going to find, though, is a great deal of information about how people get into debt and why. You'll find instructions in here about the age of credit buying, about young people getting married and the lack of preparation for it, how we are a nation of consumers, questions such as, can you really afford it, and when to buy, and how not to handle your money, some of the common traps that people fall into as they first become married, and some of the principles of how to manage your finances. For example, I can give them to you quickly here. First is the need to educate yourself about your own personal finances and keep appropriate records and so on. A few minutes, 5 or 10 minutes a day on the part of one or the other, or preferably both. Number two is to get yourself on a cash basis. How credit can be a bad investment. Number three, cut out the extras. You'll see that sometimes there are illustrations such as this one on personal debt, as we have shown already in statistics on this program. How to cut out some of the extras and what they are. Whether one family which decided to cut out on holiday spending that one year and get out of debt and save hundreds of dollars, others that might decide to do such simple things as quitting smoking, for example, where two of them were involved. Or where people actually sold a home and moved into a smaller one or moved into a different area closer to work to save money on gasoline and the like. Whether or not you really need the boat, the camper, the color TV, whether or not you ought to get rid of some of those things, cutting out maybe the extra lunches or dinners out. Principle number four, paying your debts. And number five, how to save for specific purposes and health and those principles. Budgeting your money and some very helpful information on that. How you ought to know income and outgo and how it ought to be a family affair cooperating together as a team in getting yourselves on a sound financial basis. Buying a home, how much to spend, automobile purchases, and so on. It's all here in this booklet, and the booklet is absolutely free of charge. It is not, I hasten to say, one of these many, many brochures or booklets you will see advertised in newspapers and magazines about how to get rich quick. It has nothing really directly or indirectly to say about land investment or heavy metals to hedge against inflation. It is not a pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you know, philosophical type of a booklet. It doesn't tell you about government land or surplus property, anything of the kind. It is sound financial principles. But we have had many, many letters from the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, around the world, where people have read that booklet and have applied it where they live and have used it just like a little reference book, you might say, in the kitchen drawer, wherever they keep the checking account and where they make out the checks when they sit down after the housework or whatever, if the husband's doing it at the office. And they've used it as a reference book that has really helped a lot of people to get out of debt and wisely manage their personal finances. And we want to send it to you by return mail free of charge. Well, if people could learn that a work ethic is an ethic that is based upon wise and sound principles that are really in harmony with living laws, we might be a lot better off. God Almighty, in His Word, has laid down many living, vital principles involving finances. Actually, two of the Ten Commandments directly have to do with money. And that is the one that says, thou shalt not steal, that's money, or else it's in a barter society, the cow or the oxen or what have you, the property of the neighbor, and also the last commandment that says you are not to covet, and then goes on and on about what some of the items are which are coveted by people. Now, repeatedly in the Bible, it says that people have cheated, robbed, stolen. There is an enormous number of biblical textual material available that talks about those who have done in the widow, the poor little widow lady who was living at a very narrow margin on some kind of a bare subsistence income from perhaps her dead husband's inheritance or perhaps for state or county or what kind of welfare you want to mention. And those who were taken advantage of in one very great important way right now, because so many of the elderly in the United States who after all represent the former viable muscle, you might say, of the United States industry. The people who actually were those that were managing the drills and the machinery that really made this nation so tremendously powerful in the throes of World War II are now the white-haired people at retirement age in the senior citizens' villages or the trailer courts and the like in the cities all over the United States. But their Social Security money, their welfare money, their savings money and so on was being put away when the United States dollar was worth a lot more than it is today. And now, today, these meager incomes doled out to them are having to purchase the kinds of food and rental prices soaring out of sight in many cases. And I'm talking even in trailer rentals, for example, and the prices of mobile homes and things of this nature, where multiple millions of Americans in the 55, 60, 65-year bracket retired, maybe because of health, unable to work like they once did, are finding their means of survival eroding right out of their hands because of the fantastic inflation that runs away. And today it gets to the point where you wonder whether or not, honestly, if you are in a supermarket and you're reaching for canned goods or meat or something where it is, you know, fluctuating almost daily in price, that you ought to grab this item, look around quickly for the stock boy, and put it in that metal basket and run to the check stand and try to beat that stock boy there or an assistant manager who's coming along with yet another sticker to put atop those other three stickers that they put atop the one they had on there last Tuesday, because the prices are going up so rapidly, it's about all you can do anymore to beat the price changer to the check stand.
What's behind the energy crisis? In 1850, the United States used wood for over 90% of its energy needs. By 1920, it used mostly coal. But in 1971, oil and gas accounted for over 76% of its power. Changing patterns of American society have seen changing patterns in energy consumption. Each week's U.S. oil consumption equals a line of 10,000-gallon tank cars stretching from Alaska to Florida. But how much oil is there left in the world, and how will it be distributed? What's behind the energy crisis is designed to give you an overview of the problem, its history, and how it will affect you in the future. Request your free copy of the booklet, What's Behind the Energy Crisis? There's no charge or obligation. What's Behind the Energy Crisis? Dial this toll-free number. 800-423-4444. That's 800-423-4444.
Most people are in some sort of financial trouble. I have talked to people who are multimillionaires, and I have known of the personal histories of some others rather intimately, because one of them was a person whose property was purchased at auction after his death by the college in our early days of expansion. It reminds me of the statement made by J. Paul Getty, who is reputed to be one of the world's richest human beings. He said he would give all of his millions for just one happy marriage. I don't know how many times Mr. Getty was married and divorced, but the point is, you can't buy happiness. And no matter all the little quips that we use, we say, well, you know, if having millions is unhappy, let me be unhappy in style, and so on. When you talk to the people who have been there, including wise old King Solomon in the Bible, the facts are still there, that the amount of money you have is not what measures your degree of happiness. A personal goal, a deep awareness of who and what you are and what you stand for and where you're going in life and what is your purpose and mission in life and whether you are accomplishing it and fulfilling that purpose and mission. Frankly, to love and to be loved, to appreciate and be deeply appreciated, to have the fulfillment of the discovery of the deepest values in life that are spiritual and moral and emotional in nature are of far more value than are the mere dollar signs after people's success symbols of corporate business or annual income. You probably are deeply in debt. At least if you're not deeply in debt, if you're like most average American citizens, you're probably in some degree of financial trouble. Now, if you are doing any one of the following six things or five things, and with one at the end might not be the same category, you probably are having financial trouble. First, if you have no savings account. If you have no savings at all put aside that might be able to tide you over in that rainy day, savings could be in any number of ways, as we know, including coffee cans under the chicken coop, which people don't usually advise, at least banks don't. I don't believe they do. You probably are a little bit in financial trouble. If you rob Peter to pay Paul, that is, if you are one of those who are a juggler, you know, the various collection agencies just hate this because you see the milk bill there and it's got the little red thing on it that says, please, you know, the second time, or this is the third notice, and you get all upset. You say, ah, they're dunning me again for the milk, but then you know that if you don't pay it, they're going to quit delivery. And then there's the electrical and the gas bill, and then there's the appliances and the automobile. And so as they come in, you're merely scratching your head. You got no real definitive set of records that you really understand. You don't know exactly where you are, but you juggle. Which one can I put off for 2 weeks? Who's going to call me today? Who is going to send me that second or third notice tomorrow? Do you need the lights worse than the water? Do you need the milk coming in worse than you need the TV set or what? You're probably like that because millions of American couples are. If you have a lot of charge cards and you're paying the absolute minimum on each one or the maximum on each one or using them all, you may be in trouble. Especially, I think there are a lot of family arguments over the use of charge cards, the plastic cards, because if she has an account or two or three of the department stores and he's got a gasoline card or two and another one that he uses for business luncheons and the like, a lot of times people get a little uptight about what the impulse buying of the other one might have been. if you don't know what the sum total of all your debts presently come to. Think about it for a minute. How much do you owe right now? If you don't know, honestly, you don't really know what the total adds up to in the long run, adding interest to the car payment and all the rest of it. What you really owe, you might be in some financial trouble simply because you don't know how much you owe. If you are postponing payments on some bills, the old squeaky wheel gets the grease idea, which most people operate upon. You're probably in some financial trouble. But don't be so unhappy. There are millions of other people just like you that are in the same kind of trouble. You probably have already begun to hear from your creditors if you are using those principles. If you are in debt, here's some helpful hints, even if you don't call for the booklet. One, tell your family and get everybody's full confidence and full cooperation. Gather the entire family around and say, look, fellas and girls, people, you know, everybody, we're in trouble. We're going to get out of debt. Here's what we're going to do. Secondly, make up a detailed monthly budget, including a savings figure. Find out exactly what is going out and what you've got coming in. Armed with that budget, share your expenses to fit that budget. And fourth, if you arrive at a figure that still seems to be negative, and most people will, then devise some plan of action unitedly as a family to raise extra money needed, and there are lots of ways to do it if the kids want to pitch in, to pay the debts, then go to creditors with that plan in hand and see if they will cooperate. You might be absolutely surprised at how much creditors and or lending institutions are willing to bend over backwards to help people who illustrate the fact that they are really serious about managing their finances wisely. The best advice I could give you is simply write for this booklet and go to that creditor or creditors with this booklet in hand. Get out a red pencil and underline certain important points in it. Study it, come to know what is in here, and then get about the business of getting out of debt. It isn't all that difficult. For many, many months now, I've been talking about methods that teenagers could use off and on with private people and, of course, in some of the teen programs that we try to put into effect. All about, you know, garage sales and going around spelunking at attics for old things to clean up and paint and the old milk can bit and washing cars and paper drives and recycling bottles and this type of thing that kids can do to earn money, which is really a fascinating and exciting thing for them. The whole family can pitch in and help that family get out of debt. So write for this booklet on managing your personal finances and get your name on the mailing list for the current number of the Plain Truth magazine that deals with these and other vital issues of global and personal concern. The Plain Truth magazine, a magazine of understanding, is published on three continents, read in all inhabited parts of the world, read by literally millions of people, and goes absolutely free of charge. For example, your already paid subscription is read by perhaps about 3 to 5 million people, and it's printed in several different languages, distributed around the world. You will find people reading The Plain Truth in the Azores, the Canary Islands. You'll find them down in parts of Africa, the periphery of Asia, throughout India, in Indonesia and the Philippines by the tens of thousands, people all over Europe, behind the Iron Curtain, in the French language, the German, the Spanish language, in other publications and articles from the Plain Truth magazine, and our English language edition printed in Europe, in Australia, and in the United States, sent free of charge every single month to 3 million households and read by millions. You need your name on the mailing list of the Plain Truth magazine right away, and we'll send it to you by return mail absolutely free of charge. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong, goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.